and air today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Almost 25,000 people were waiting longer than 24 hours in an emergency department in the first 5 months of this year. New figures revealed that of those, 8,204 were aged over 75. This represents a significant increase when compared with the same period last year. Between January to May last year, 8,865 people were waiting longer than 24 hours to be admitted to hospital via an emergency department. Dr. Fergal Hickey is Communications Officer with the Irish Association for Emergency Medicine. He's also an emergency consultant at Sligo General Hospital. Dr. Hickey, good morning and welcome to the programme again.
Good morning, Owen.
Concerning figures, would you say, and just highlighting the pressure that staff at hospitals are under?
They are absolutely and utterly unacceptable. There is no other way to describe them. Now, as you said, these are patients whose emergency care is finished, but require hospital admission. So, for example, a diagnosis has been made that they need their appendix out and they're waiting to go to a surgical bed, or that they have a pneumonia, they've received their intravenous antibiotics and they're waiting for a medical bed, and so on. So this is not an emergency department problem. However, it is visited on the emergency department in the sense that the emergency department ends up getting used as a warehouse for admitted inpatients at the same time as it's expected to function as an emergency department. So it's completely unacceptable, and unfortunately has only been getting worse over the last 10 years. Nobody has dealt with it, quite simply.
Now, these figures were provided to Sinn Féin spokesperson on health, David Cullinan, through a parliamentary question. And speaking on national media, the Chief Operations Officer for the HSE, Damien McCallion, said that hospitals are focused on reducing waiting times for older people and the HSE is preparing for a very difficult winter, planning for all possible scenarios. That's one of the things I think that is most concerning. 8,204 of these people were over the age of 75 waiting in emergency departments for that length of time, which is quite concerning.
Absolutely, and the winter is going to be even worse than previous winters. I mean, we need to understand what the problem is. The problem is threefold at the moment. First of all, we do not have enough acute hospital beds for our population. So we have 2.7 acute hospital beds per 1,000 of the population. The OECD average is 4.3. So we have two-thirds of the average. So until and unless we resolve that problem, we're going to be in serious difficulty. That's one issue. The second is that since COVID, it's become very difficult for patients who have completed their hospital care to be transferred to facilities in the community, be they nursing homes, long stay facilities, or to supported care in the community because of restrictions brought about by COVID. And we saw it from yesterday's figures that many of the deaths, the majority of deaths, in fact, took place in the older population and also took place in longer-term facilities. So this has made everybody in that sector paranoid and it has slowed down the movement of patients out. Mm. And the third issue, and I think it's important that your listeners understand this, we still have a lot of COVID around. It isn't killing people in the same numbers. It isn't resulting in them being admitted to intensive care units. But they are being admitted to hospital. And if you've got patients on a ward with COVID, then you can't transfer into that ward patients who don't have COVID, otherwise they will get COVID. So it means that the beds that we would have historically had available to us are not available currently. And there are outbreaks on wards which are making the situation worse.
Yeah, let's pick up on the first point that you made there, Dr. Hickey, with regards to the acute hospital beds. And I note that Damien McCallion said that work is underway to deliver increased bed capacity, including 190 acute beds, 24 critical care beds and 200 community intermediate care beds coming on stream. It's probably not enough, definitely not enough, but it is a start. How much do we need?
Well, the acute bed capacity review from 2019 suggested we needed immediately something in the order of over 2,000 acute beds. Mm. So, you know, we're well short of that. And unfortunately, this incremental development is not really going to get us to where we need to go. And that has been the difficulty we've had for a number of years. You know, Now, two beds gets added here, one bed gets added somewhere else. And it's that sort of incrementalism that's not going to produce the necessary improvements that we need to see. We also need to bear in mind that the population is getting older. We've also got people who were, if you like, medical successes. So these are patients who previously would have died of a condition, be it a stroke, be it a heart attack, be it cancer, who are now living significantly longer. But they're also living, they're often living with the disease and will have periodic medical crises and require hospital admission. And we've never really created the number of beds necessary to deal with our demand. You'll also be aware that our population has gone up based on the last census, and we've also got a significant influx of people from outside Ireland, many of whom will have medical conditions which require treatment. So the demand is going up, the supply of beds really hasn't kept pace with that, and we haven't had the ambition. And I know Damien McCallion well, I speak to him on a fairly regular basis, but this sort of incrementalism is not going to solve the problem. We need to remember the situation that happened when TB was a scourge, and some of your older listeners will be very much aware of that. We built big. We decided we needed hospitals built to deal with this problem. So what we need to do is have significant extensions to hospitals rather than a bed here and a bed there and think we're doing ourselves a fabulous job.
And finally then, Dr. Fergal Hickey, just to put on record before I make the final point, that every time we speak about hospitals and the pressure that hospitals are under, it's under no fault or through no fault of the staff, the nurses, the doctors, who are all doing their best and working incredibly well in those situations. We haven't got the trolley count to hand for this morning, but I know that over the last few days there's been in the region of between 400 and 500 patients waiting for a hospital bed, in the late 300s waiting in emergency departments, 71 waiting in wards. One of the days there was 33 waiting in Naas General Hospital. Our confidence in the hospital system may be dwindling. People are thinking, what's the point in going? I'm going to be sitting there waiting on an uncomfortable chair for a number of hours, mightn't get seen for ages, and maybe we're missing out on certain diagnoses or emergencies.
Well, I think it's important that people realise that the process that we use in all emergency departments in the country, NACE included, is that people are seen by a triage nurse and they're prioritised based on clinical need. So the ones that end up waiting longest to be seen are people who are thought to have conditions which are not as urgent as others. So if you come with a heart attack or a stroke or some major medical potential major medical diagnosis, you will be seen quickly. The challenge is, and what we were talking about earlier on in the interview, was if the emergency treatment is completed and you require hospital admission, then unfortunately you're going to have to wait a long time. There is no doubt that patients with more minor complaints wait longer, and part of the reason for that is that the physical space in which to see them is taken up by patients who should be somewhere else. So we end up, and the term I've used before, and I've used it talking to you, Owen, is that we end up being used as a warehouse for admitted inpatients, which is unacceptable. Now, thank you for making the point, the great work that staff in emergency departments do, because but for them, the situation would be far, far worse. But this elastic band has got to the point of snapping. So many of my older nursing colleagues are choosing to take early retirement. Many of my younger nursing colleagues are opting to emigrate. So we know that now that Australia has opened up, we lose a significant number of nurses to Australia. Mm. The same is true of emergency department doctors. They're either leaving emergency medicine, they're leaving the profession in some cases, which is tragic, or they're emigrating.
Yeah.
And until and unless we solve this problem and make the situation in which people work, but also people have to be seen and treated, more acceptable, then this is only going to get worse.
Yeah, and I know personally of two doctors who are emigrating to Perth in Australia on Wednesday next. They are two of 120 who are heading over from Ireland to Australia, which just underpins the point that you are making there. But it's all on the back of almost 25,000 people waiting longer than 24 hours in an emergency department in the first 5 months of this year. New figures showing earlier this week, and that is Dr. Fergal Hickey, Communications Officer with the Irish Association of Emergency Medicine and emergency consultant at Sligo General. Thanks, Dr. Hickey.
Now, AWARE, the national charity, they support people impacted by depression and bipolar disorder, are seeking volunteers for their support line. But before we get to that, I am joined by the support line manager with AWARE, that is Lauren Smith. Lauren, good morning to you. And just before we get to the volunteers needed, tell us what AWARE do.
Hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. So just to start, to give a brief overview of AWARE, we're a national organisation. We provide support, information and education services to those impacted by depression, bipolar disorder and other mood-related conditions. AWARE also support friends and families of those who are experiencing mood-related conditions, and we offer free webinars, and it's all about education and community connection.
So the support line, can you be somebody who they themselves are living with depression or bipolar, or a family member to get in touch?
Yes, absolutely. So to volunteer with the support line, it's not a prerequisite to...
No, sorry, I mean first off, actually using the support line. Is it only those who are living with depression and bipolar to use it, or can their family and friends also use the line?
So both can use it. Primarily, I suppose, we would target people who are experiencing mood-related conditions, but friends and family can call us to seek information on other supports that we offer for friends and family. So certainly they can call us for information as well. Yeah, they're very welcome.
So if somebody wants to volunteer, what advice would you give them? What kind of personality do they need to have? Do they need to have certain characteristics that will help them in a situation like that?
So we have volunteers from all walks of life, from 21 up to 70s as well. The only requirements that we ask for are an empathetic attitude, compassion, and a good listener. But full training is provided. You're supported every step of the way. So if you are someone who's sensitive and empathic, you know, please get in touch with us.
Because obviously if one is sensitive, empathic, compassionate, they themselves might be very affected by hearing these stories. So as you're saying, support is always there. Let us know a bit more about that support that the volunteer themselves would receive.
That's very true. And anybody who is listening to content that is painful or distressing, there is that susceptibility to compassion fatigue. So AWARE would have a support team, I suppose. We would have support groups that I would offer Mondays and Fridays. I also call volunteers and check in with them after their shifts. And there's ongoing, continuous support in that role for anything that comes up for volunteers.
Now, explain to us what compassion fatigue is.
So compassion fatigue can be a type of burnout. So if you're listening to distressing content regularly, you may find yourself, especially if you're sensitive, taking on some of what you're hearing and some of the pain that's coming across to you. It's something that all of us are susceptible to, but it's very manageable. So AWARE are aware of that, and we offer the appropriate support then as well to prevent that kind of burnout.
Okay, now volunteers, they can work remotely from their own home or at the Dublin headquarters of AWARE. That's on Leeson Street. If people want to get in touch with you first off to become a volunteer, where is the best place to do so?
So if they email us, they can go onto our website at aware.ie and contact us from there. They're also welcome to phone the support line. That's 1-800-80-48-48 to get in touch with us, and we can direct them on then to our recruitment and training manager, which would be Amanda Vaughan, who does fantastic work.
I've actually spoken to Amanda before myself. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. That is Lauren Smith, support line manager with AWARE. And just to give the support line out again, it's 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. The line 1-800-80-48-48, and you can get in touch if you're impacted by depression, bipolar disorder or other mood related conditions. Also, for more on AWARE and the volunteering, go on to aware.ie. That's /get involved/volunteering. AWARE established in 1985, and they are a free support and education and information organisation for people impacted by those disorders I just mentioned.
Yeah, we're just going to catch up on some of the messages then that have come in on the WhatsApp. And Aoife in Newbridge says that county librarians used to be offered living space in the headquarters. Only one ever used it in Kildare, but in other places it was much more common. Thanks indeed for that information, Aoife. Also, Jack was in touch on the topic of hospitals, saying that the only thing that has increased in this country is private hospitals. And he's saying that the public waiting lists continue to grow. He's unhappy with the government and politicians. concessions, while May says, I thought the reason they put up the price of drinks in the off-licence was to stop people drinking so much, and now they're going to leave the nightclubs open longer. She says it's beggar's belief. Well, some people would argue that after 2.5 years of nightclubs and pubs and stuff being closed, they wanted to see that business returned and nightlife returning as well. When you compare Ireland to, say, Europe, we're actually one of the countries that close earliest when it comes to nightclubs. Like, there's nightclubs in Germany, Spain, Portugal, France. They stay open till nearly 6 in the morning, whereas we close at, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the early hours of the morning as well, Ciara.
Yeah, if you look at the continent, people don't go out to a nightclub until sometimes like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And you could be coming home from the nightclub at 7 a.m. on a tram with other people who are on their way to work. It's mad, the difference.
Absolutely. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking to the Nace Man, who sang for President Michael D. Higgins, and also at halftime at the Aviva Stadium in the game between Ireland and Portugal.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, my next guest has made quite a name for himself over the last couple of years, playing sold-out shows around the country, playing to countless thousands of people on online streams on Facebook and YouTube, playing for President Michael D. Higgins, and also at halftime at the Aviva Stadium. He's a Nace native, Dan McCabe. Good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks very much for having me. I think there's a lot that's happened since the last time you spoke. I remember being up with you in the studio, but God, a lot has happened. It's just been crazy. I suppose lockdown really kicked things off. Before lockdown, I was gigging in pubs and stuff, and then when the lockdown happened, obviously there was no pubs to gig in, so I kind of had to adapt and do something else. So just out of boredom, I suppose, I started posting some videos online, and just the reaction to it was absolutely phenomenal. It was crazy. So yeah, now it's kind of, after lockdown, I found myself in a position where I was able to go on a tour of Ireland and, I suppose, yeah, play some massive venues and do some really fun stuff in between all of it. It was a great experience.
Tell us about the early days when you started music. So for people who don't know, myself and yourself were in school together in Piper's Hill, so you're the same age as me in the mid-20s. But you've always had an interest in music. There's a bit of a musical history in the family as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like my dad is a musician, his dad was a musician, and like my great-great-grandfather is a musician. Like it's been something that's been passed down through generations. And now I have a daughter as well, she's 4, and she's looking like she's going to be a musician as well, which is great. So I don't know, it's just something that's kind of in the blood with the family. Like I said, it's just been passed down through generations, so it's great to carry on the family tradition, you know.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you've played shows around the county in pubs, and that's how you kind of got your name out there. But when lockdown came, you used it to your advantage, because everything was online, doing live streams and, you know, playing from your sitting room or your bedroom, and that's where a lot of people started tuning into your music.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it was only for my partner, Ciara. She kind of coaxed me to go up to the bedroom and record some music, and I didn't really think that people would want to actually listen to it, but she convinced me anyways to go up and record some stuff and post it out, and so I did. And just the reaction was crazy. I suppose people didn't have a whole lot to do, and there was a lot of time being spent on Facebook and YouTube and this kind of stuff, so I kind of got lucky in a sense. I was actually working as a healthcare worker myself in Nace Hospital, and I was coming home in the evenings, and it was tough days, and it was a tough time just in general, but I get home in the evenings, and just as a form of escaping the doom and gloom of the day, I'd go up and record some music, and that was my way of just dealing with just the stress of lockdown. Like, but after posting the videos and just seeing the reaction and just the messages that we received from people, just saying how much the music actually helped them as well, music helped them through hard times as well, you know, makes it all the more worthwhile, you know.
I didn't realise you were working up in Nace Hospital, actually, Dan, so you were doing that in the early part of the pandemic, was it?
Yeah, in the early part of the pandemic, just a neighbour of mine said that there was a position available, and I just said, I just said, why not? So, I was working as a household assistant, but it's basically just a porter, and then I was in the cleaning part of the hospital, and also in the catering section. So I've Yeah, no, I've done a few jobs up there, but it was the staff up there were absolutely amazing. They were so friendly, so nice to me. But yeah, the job was incredibly eye opening and tough at times, but it was definitely worthwhile. You know,
we're going to play one of the songs that you've covered in a moment. You're doing music now, I'd imagine, full time, and you've had a very, very busy couple of years. You found your niche, though, and I'm sure it's quite hard for an artist who's starting out to kind of decide what kind of music you're going to play or whether you're going to do covers, etc. You do kind of the older Irish classics, the likes of Luke Kelly, the Dubliners, and loads others there, which seem to connect well with people.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's in the family. Irish music, especially, is what the family is known for. But when I was gigging in pubs, you kind of have to cater to a wider audience. You don't know who's coming into the pub or who's coming into a restaurant, for instance. But Irish music is definitely where my heart is at, and it's what I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, so talk to me then a little bit, Dan, about the Irish tour that you've went on this year. We mentioned this from the outset, and also some of the highlights along the way, playing at the Aviva Stadium, playing at the Auras for Michael D. Higgins, and you've also been on the Late Late Show as well, so it has been quite a roller coaster couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. We started the tour in October of last year, and we finished in March of this year, and between that date and this date, we've done about 52 dates. 52 concerts around the country, played in every county in the country, and it was just incredible, like from playing in the Olympia and the INEC in Killarney to playing to some small community halls. Just met some great people along the way, and friends for life, you know. It was just a great experience to travel Ireland with Irish music and just celebrate our culture, you know. It was a fantastic experience. So I was sitting in my bedroom and a phone call came from a Dublin number, and I didn't recognise the number. And I just answered it, and it was just like, "Hi, Daniel, calling from Michael Higgins' office." And I genuinely thought one of my friends was messing with me. But as it turned out, it was President Higgins' secretary, and he just said that the president was a fan, and he wanted me to come up and sing as part of his New Year's Eve speech. So obviously I was delighted and very, very honoured to be asked. And then Aviva was, by request of the Irish football team, apparently they're big fans, the guys in the squad, they just requested for me to come up and sing at halftime, you know. That was just a crazy experience again, you know, 52,000 people in a stadium, and Cristiano Ronaldo was there, and you know, all the superstars of the Portugal team. But it was some experience.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's not bad to have those guys listening to your music, I suppose, when they're getting ready for the match or at half time.
Absolutely, yeah.
But also here within the county, Dan, I know you've a very loyal support from Naas. You're originally from Sarto. Yourself and Gary Cully are doing the estate proud there. But the support seems to travel with you from Kildare to the various venues that you go to.
Absolutely. The local support has been, you know, it's what really kicked things off for me. It was just the people in the local area sharing my stuff, and then it kind of got out to a wider audience. But myself and Gary, we've been working hard for a very long time now, and it's kind of started, the hard work is coming to proof, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, it's a great story. Great to chat to you. As I said, we were in school together back in Piper's Hill. We had some great days there as well. But it's fantastic to see yourself and Gary, another former student of Piper's Hill, doing well on the boxing scene, yourself with the music scene, and no doubt we'll chat to you again soon. We're going to play one of the most known songs from yourself that you've covered. This one is Grace, but Dan McCabe from Naas, good to talk to you, and we'll chat soon.
Thank you, all mind yourself. Thanks very much.
As we gather in the chapel here and home, Clunane Home Jane, I think about these last few weeks. Oh, will they say we fail? From our school days, they have told us that we should yearn for liberty. Yet all I want in this dark place is to have you here with me. Oh, grace, just hold me in your arms and let this moment linger. Take I'll place this wedding ring upon your finger. There won't be time to share her love, for we must say goodbye. Now I know it's hard for you, my love, to ever understand the love I bear for these brave men, my love for this dear land. But when Padraig called me to his side down in the GPO, I had to leave my own sick bed, to him I had to go. Oh grace, just hold me in your arms and let this moment linger. They take me out at dawn and I will die. With all my love, I'll place this wedding ring upon your finger. There won't be long to share her love, for we must say goodbye. And now has the dawn is breaking, my heart is breaking too. On this May morn as I walk out, my thoughts will be of you. So I'll write some words upon the wall, so everyone will know I loved so much all I could see was blood upon the road. Oh grace, just hold me in your arms and let this moment linger, cause they take me out at dawn and I will die. I'll place this wedding ring upon your finger. Well, there won't be time to share our love, for we must say goodbye. Well, there won't be time to share our love, for we must say goodbye.
Yeah, he's some voice, doesn't he? Dan McCabe from Sarto in Naas, and that is his cover of Grace here on KFM. Great to chat to him, and if you missed that interview, we'll play it again this evening on the Irish music scene from 7 o'clock. Just before we take a break and then go to the newsroom for the headlines, Ciara is back in studio. And Ciara, yesterday we got some figures from the number of deaths related to COVID in the county recorded by Kildare County Council and some of the other councils around the country.
Yeah, well, we got the deaths for the 26 counties from the Central Statistics Office. So it's between March 2020 and February 22, these recordings did take place. So in Kildare County Council, they recorded 279 deaths related to COVID-19. Now, almost one third of virus deaths recorded in Ireland occurred in nursing homes. 59% of deaths related to the virus occurred in general and orthopaedic hospitals. If you look nationally, the highest number recorded was in Dublin City Council, 951. And then Leitrim County Council had the lowest number of deaths nationally at 26. People aged 65 and over, they accounted for 91% of the deaths recorded. Then if we look to our neighbours, Laois County Council, they recorded 93. Offaly County Council, 67. Meath County Council, 161. And Wicklow County Council, 150.
Yeah, more details can be found on the CSO's website, www.cso.ie.